Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Lansing, Michigan, and earned degrees from MSU and the Osteopathic College in Chicago. He's run a prototypical sports medicine clinic for 40 years and has been the fight doctor at 10 world championship boxing fights. He's beaten Arthur Ashe in tennis and Sam Snead in golf. And he's also eagled every hole at the Lansing Country Club. That is tall cotton. His name, Dr. Tom Jamieson. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Prasula, and we're with Dr. Tom Jamieson, headquartered out of Lansing, Michigan. Tom, an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jack, and it's an honor to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Born in Lansing, Michigan. Had wonderful parents. My dad's name was Bill. My mom's name was Beatrice. We had four boys in the family. We all grew up in Lansing on 821 North Foster Street. My mom and dad were the motivation of all four of us boys to move on to great lives and lucky lives.
Tom, what's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
I think from both of them, I learned to love your family, learn to work hard, and learn to be a good person.
You eventually go to Michigan State, and you earned a BS degree in biological sciences. What is that?
That's correct, Jack. Biological sciences is the study of zoology and botany, both sides of the science field, and I had a very broad education in that area and then was able to get my pre-medical degree at Michigan State and then go on to osteopathic school.
You played tennis for Michigan State. You got married at 18. You had three children by 21, and you were taking 18 credits. How did you do it all?
Jack, thinking back on it, I don't really know how I did it. Everything was just blended together and had that great support from my mom and dad and my brothers, and lived at home as a freshman, got married as a freshman, was able to play tennis during my freshman year, not on the varsity. You couldn't play until you were a sophomore, but worked hard at playing tennis and kept my nose to the grindstone and worked hard and tried to do as best as I could at both my studying and my sports and my family.
You've got some Jamieson doctrines that you live your life by, and one of them is, you say, quote, "You study before you play."
Well, somehow I learned the facts that you better get your studying done and try to get it on time. If possible, stay ahead with your studying. But I always learned that when I was done with classes, if I had time, I got my studying done before I played. When I was at Michigan State, it came studying from or classes from 8 o'clock till 3 o'clock and tennis from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock or 6:30. And then I'd go right to the library and do my studying and then be with the family after that. But I always seemed to, for some reason, get my studying done. And when, as a freshman, when I started to have a family and be married, you really didn't have a lot of time other than be in school and do what you had to do. You didn't have times to go to fraternities and do the other things that dormitories would require. So I just studied before I played.
You complete your freshman year at MSU, and then in the summer, you meet, by circumstance, Dave Schrott. It changes your life. Tell us about it.
When I finished my freshman year, I had the summer to both play tennis tournaments and to work. I was expecting my first child in a few months, so I knew I had to work sometime. So Michigan State campus was doing a lot of building and construction work. I was out there looking for a job and somebody pointed out a big tall man over at this one trailer site. They were building the chemistry building there. I went up to this man, introduced myself. His name was Dave Sprott. And I asked Dave if they were hiring any laborers. And he looked at me and said, no, we don't hire any laborers here. We're a mechanical contractor. He worked for Robert Carter Corporation out of Oak Park, Michigan. And he said, do you happen to do any drafting? And I said, yes, I had a year of drafting in junior high school. He said, well, my engineer might need somebody in a couple weeks. Give me your name. Give me your phone number. And he wrote my name down on a little piece of paper, my phone number, and said, I'll call you in a couple weeks. 2 weeks to the day, Dave Sprott called me and said, we need a draftsman. Would you like to work for us? I had already found a job, but for some reason I said this was more important, so I let my job go and went to work for Dave Sprott on campus in a back of a trailer next to his engineer doing some drafting. The job was supposed to be for 10 weeks. I got the job done in about 3 weeks. They wanted to keep me on, and so they created some other work for me. So I started helping the engineer with his job. And that job led for the next 4 years, being able to continue to work while I was playing tennis, while I was going to school, and while I was having a family. So what a lucky thing to have met Dave Sprott. I went on to be able to meet Robert Carter, who was the owner of the company. He was a big Michigan State fan. I put on some tennis exhibitions at Oak Park, or at his country club down in Detroit, Orchard Lake Country Club. Did some tours for his people from Michigan State, and he had me work there for the next 4 years.
Tom Jamison, how did you start your career in sports medicine?
Well, when I was at Chicago in school there during the 4 years, my last year or so, I volunteered to help at some of the high school football games. I enjoyed doing that. And then when I got done with Chicago, I came back to Lansing and interned at Lansing General Hospital. And there was a famous osteopathic doctor at that time, Dr. Larry Jarrett, who did lots of the sports medicine there. And he asked me when I was an intern if I would like to help him at a Friday night football game. The first school that I started to work with was Lansing Everett High School, where Magic Johnson eventually went to. So he said, meet me at 6:30, the football game's at 7, at Everett High School. I was there at 6:30, and Larry Jarrett never showed up. And from then on, I was Everett High School's team physician for the past 38 years. The next year, I added Eastern High School. The following year, I added Sexton High School. And I worked with all three schools for 38 years as their team physician.
We're talking to Dr. Tom Jamison, and I'm Jack Rasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. Tom Jamison, who opened a prototypical sports medicine clinic in Michigan, in Lansing, 40 years ago. Tom, it's 1970, and you start a holistic medicine practice. I mean, that's leading bleeding edge back then. Why'd you do it?
Well, I think, Jack, the reason I did it was because of my training as an osteopathic physician, which is learning to take care of people in a holistic way, not looking at their individual one complaint, but look at them as a total person. I realized that the importance of watching their nutrition was very helpful in their health care. Within a couple years after I started practice, I hired a full-time nutritionist to work in my office. A couple years later, I hired an acupuncturist before people knew much about acupuncture. So for the past several years, I've had Chinese acupuncturists work for me in my office to help with a holistic concept of getting people healthy. And part of that concept is, you know, not using as much medication, but using both nutrition and exercise to keep people healthy.
Not many doctors are business-oriented and or entrepreneur. You went from being the doctor for the Lansing All-Stars football team to the owner. How did that happen?
Well, first of all, I'm not an entrepreneur. I wasn't very good at any of my entrepreneurial investment things. And this was kind of a, I was, again, back in 1970 when Dr. Jarrett asked me to work with the Lansing Everett football team. On a Saturday night, he asked me to be help him at a Lansing All-Star football game. Be there at 6:30, and game starts at 7, and Dr. Jarrett didn't show up, and I turned out to be the physician for the Lansing All-Stars over the next several years. After doing that for 2 or 3 years, the All-Star team had some financial difficulties, so they organized 4 different people to help with those finances, and I turned out to be one of those 4 people just to help that football team and help those players. And so I had 2 aspects of being the physician and doing, you know, helping with the finances of it. Lots of fun stories around that. Lots of trouble around that, like all franchise putting in money to a sports team. But we did that for 2 or 3 years, and I had a lot of fun with it.
Tom Jamison, how has sports medicine changed in the last 40 years?
Wow, that's a great question. And when I first started, when I was at a football game, a high school game, or one of the professional games, I was probably the only medical care that was at that game. Probably 5 years into my practicing, I realized the importance of having athletic trainers be at sporting events. I hired athletic trainers to work for me and shared them with the high school. Then it developed into where I would have the high schools help me, and we'd have an individual athletic trainer at all of the high schools. And so just the concept of all of the great care that they get with athletic trainers helping the physicians, a lot more information we have on, you know, following with x-rays and MRIs and CAT scans, being able to diagnose better is improved sports medicine care. You know, the concept of how to take care of a concussion has been a great big change in the last 3 or 4 years in sports medicine. So there's been a lot of fun things and good things, and the athletes get a lot better care now than they may have gotten 40 years ago.
You've been the fight doctor at over 200 professional boxing matches and 10 world championship fights. How did you ever get involved with the boxing game?
Back again, probably 40 years ago, a patient of mine by the name of Bob Every, who was the great boxing coach around Lansing, and he knew that I was interested in sports medicine, and he came and asked me if I would volunteer to help him at an amateur boxing match in Lansing, Michigan. I did that, and that grew into helping him at many amateur boxing matches, from Golden Gloves to just his club boxing, and that grew from doing it in Lansing, Michigan, to doing it in Detroit, to doing it in all over the United States and all over the world. I've been in Russia working boxing matches for the United States Olympic team. Did that several times. Went to Canada when the United States boxed it against the Canadians up in Edmonton, Canada. Great trip. Happened to be able to meet Wayne Gretzky. I was on my way flying there thinking about, what am I doing in February going to Edmonton to work boxing? And on the plane, I thought, man, that's where Wayne Gretzky's at. I wonder if he will be there or whether they'll be home for a hockey game. And I get off the plane, and who meets me at the airport but Wayne Gretzky's business agent. I get off the plane, and he says, what are you doing tonight? I said, I don't have any plans tonight. He says, would you like to go to a hockey game? So not only do I go to the game, I meet Wayne Gretzky that night. I end up having lunch with him the next day, going to the game the next night, and had a great time in Canada without not just the boxing, but hockey also.
Tom Jamison, one night you disqualify Elvin Blue Lewis. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a fight here in Detroit area. He didn't pass his physical exam when I did his physical, but he was the main attraction of the fight. So the promoters came to me and said, you can't fail him on his physical exam. We got to pass him. I said, boy, I just can't do that. I said, maybe if you sign a letter and he pulls us away from any responsibility if anything happens, we could go on with this. And so that's what we did. He had poor vision in one eye where he couldn't see very well. And so we ended up allowing him to box. funny circumstances around that. He ends up getting a cut above his eye, bleeds into that eye, and we're trying to stop that bleeding, and they're wanting me to stop the fight, and I said, well, it's his eye, he can't see out of anyway, and the people are screaming and wanting the fight to go on. Then he cuts the other guy's eye, and he's bleeding in the other eye, and now I'm going from side to side at in between each of the rounds and stopping the bleeding and letting them go on, and the fight went on, it finished, and it was one of the wildest, craziest boxing matches I've ever been at.
So, you've played tennis against Bobby Riggs, Arthur Ashe, Rosie Casals. Tell us about your matches with Bobby Riggs.
In Lansing, back years ago, we had celebrity golf matches where we raised money for the American Cancer Society. So I had the fortune of being asked to play in certain of those. We had lots of celebrities there, and people signed up to play. And one year I played with Mike Hill, and one year I played with Dick Raddatz, the baseball player. And they asked me to play with Sam Snead, and they also asked me to play with Bobby Riggs. And they expanded that golf match into a tennis match. So they decided that they also could have a night of tennis where they could raise some more money. So Bobby Riggs and I played a tennis match and a golf match in Lansing. The first tennis match, he came up a couple weeks before to promote it, and we played a big exhibition, and I beat him 6-love, 6-1, and tennis match at one of the clubs. And then the big tennis match was I had to give him the doubles alley to make it fairer, apparently. And I said, heck yes, I could do that. And we played in front of 5,000 people at Eastern High School's arena. They brought in a tennis court. And Bobby Riggs was the greatest tennis player with using the doubles alleys that I've ever seen. And I lost to Bobby Riggs in two sets, and we had a great time. It was a fun match and a great thing for Lansing.
Arthur Ashe.
I was invited after medical school to play with Arthur Ashe in a match at Michigan State. Arthur Ashe had previously, about 3 or 4 weeks before, won the United States Open. And again, this was in a charity event for a fundraiser for a group, and I said I would do it. So he and I played in front of many hundreds of people at Michigan State.
We're talking to Dr. Tom Jamieson, who's also beat Sam Snead in golf one day. When we come back, we'll ask him about that experience. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to Dr. Tom Jamieson, who once beat Sammy Snead in golf. Please.
Back again at the Lansing Country Club, they had a celebrity day and brought in a lot of celebrities. This year they brought in Sam Snead. I was able to play with Sam and a good friend of his out of Flint, and a partner of mine, Peter Krzyzewski. The four of us played golf, and we had a two-on-two match, and I had a match with Sam Snead, and I was able to beat him by one stroke. That day I think I shot 69 and he might have shot 70. But what a great fun day that was.
Tom, you have eagled every hole at Lansing Country Club. That means the four par threes, you've gotten aces on each. The four par fives, you've gotten threes on each. And every par four, some are 420, 430, you've gotten twos on every one. How?
Well, first of all, the par fives, everybody gets around and makes eagles there eventually. And when you play, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 days a week, like I sometimes play, and if you play it enough, you'll be able to do it. That's what I think. I mean, and I played there so much and had so much fun playing there. I even have a streak of playing there for 10 and a half years with only missing 1 month. I played through the summer and the winter. I never started this as something we wanted to do, but about 10 years ago, a friend of mine and I, the winters were where they even put in temporary greens in December, January, February, and after doing that for 3 years, I said to my friend, you know, we played for 3 years in a row and never missed a month. Well, since then, it's been a challenge. So just played yesterday and also on November 1st. And that was my 128th out of 129 months of playing golf at the Lansing Country Club. So I fortunate enough to live on the golf course, being able to play there a lot. And when you play a lot, you have fun things happen. And that's how I probably have done that.
You've been around a lot of great leaders. What makes a great leader?
Wow, Jack. I think one of the things I think about, I am not probably a great leader, but what I try to do, and I think the leaders I see are good people, you know, to be a good person. And if you're good and you work hard at what you like to do and you are a good person, I think you can be a great leader.
Speaking of good people, you're very close to Tom Izzo. Tell us a couple stories about Tom Izzo.
Well, Tom is just a wonderful person. He's so unusual in the fact that he is friendly with everybody. I mean, I'm so proud when I have somebody with me that's not met Tom, and you introduce Tom to them. Tom's excited about meeting other people like that. There's a lot of people you can introduce to your friend, and they might barely glimpse at him and say hi to him, but Tom is different. He becomes a friend of anybody that's a friend of yours, and he is just a gentleman and fun to be with.
Why has he been so successful?
Probably, again, he's one of the great people that you can know. He's a good person, and he just works hard. He does everything to perfection. I mean, going to basketball practice, it's fun to watch him work. At one session in basketball practice when the players are doing their stretching, Tom stands at the free throw line and shoots 100 free throws. And many times I have counted every single one, and he will make 96, 97 or more of those free throws out of 100. And that goes back to a time, I guess he missed a free throw back in high school. So he's a perfectionist, and he wants to be a good person, and he wants his people around him to be good.
Another person, Mark Hollis, was the person who started this whole outdoor hockey that the NHL has now, you know, turned into an annual January 1st game. Also, he was instrumental in this upcoming basketball game on the aircraft carrier between MSU and North Carolina. And I guess President Obama has announced he's going to show up. So Jameson will be there, I'm sure. Talk to us about Mark Hollis.
I think Mark is a lot like Tom Izzo, and they've known each other for a long, long time. But Mark Hollis, again, is somebody that just sees in the future. I mean, the things he's come up with are just amazing, and they have created adventures for all of us at Michigan State to attend. I attended that outdoor hockey game that he first did, and it's one of the memorable things, many memorable things that I've been able to do that Mark's been able to do. You know, time doesn't go by that he doesn't create something new. And this basketball game on the aircraft carrier is another one. And that should be a fun event for all of us.
You cherish, you reach for new opportunities. You love to take risks in life, follow your dreams. A lot of people find that very hard to do. Talk to us about taking risks.
Well, in my case, I've been lucky because I've been around people that are really good people, and I think being around them has given me the opportunity to expand into tennis and into golf, and taking a risk is what we all have to do, whether it's with our job or with our family or whatever it is, and you just have to work hard, and you've got to try new things. But again, the underlying thing with doing all of that is, I'll go back to the fact I've said it before, but to be a good person. If you ask any of my children, six of them, what's the most important thing in life, and they will all tell you to be a good person. My 11-year-old son, Parker, if you were to ask him that right now, he would say, Dad, it's to be a good person. And Parker is a good person because he said it about three times a week since he was born almost.
This Parker is if you're going to buy stock in a young man, buy stock in this Parker Jameson. He's an up-and-coming. How many times has he been a champion at Lansing?
He's won their golf club championship for 7 years. He's 11 now. He won it when he was 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. And so he loves to play golf, loves to play the other sports. Everybody knows Parker's a good person, and my adult friends just love to go play with him.
1 year recently, normally he wins the two-day tournament amongst these kids by 50, 60 strokes. And 1 year after 1 day, he was only leading by 8, 10 strokes. He's dejected. What'd you tell him?
That was last year. He was a little dejected. He was only up by 8 strokes, but he extended that lead to, I think it was maybe 18 strokes by the end of the second day. This year, he wasn't dejected. He was up by 30 strokes after the first day, and he ended up winning the 36-hole tournament by 53 strokes this year. So, but he never thinks about himself as being good. He just is a neat boy to be around.
I've shared a lot of graces with people throughout the world before a meal. And when Parker Jameson says grace, I mean, he says it as great as any cardinal, you know, business dignitary. He's unbelievable.
Jack, he takes
after Debbie, that's
it. Yeah, he shocks me, Jack. And we did that just the other day. I invited 9 people to Brody Group at Michigan State to have dinner. That's the Brody dormitory. They have this great eating facility. I invited 9 people to dinner. We all sat down, a couple of Michigan State students and some guys I was playing golf with that day. And we all hung onto hands. I said, Parker, say the prayer. And he says that at our Thanksgiving, not the adults, not the ministers that come. Parker says it. And he really is amazing. He goes to Lansing Christian School. And, so, you know, he's just a Christian boy who can come up with saying some wonderful, wonderful things about, you know, what he's done for the day and what he's done for the year. He is just fun to have do that.
Tom Jameson, you're very humble, and you have a great way about you. How did you get that?
Well, I think I don't know that that's all true. I hope it is. Again, it's back to your parents and back to the way your family was. We had humble parents, and my brothers, I had 3 brothers, 4 boys in the family. Everybody were good in school, and they were good athletes. They worked hard, but nobody bragged about what they did. Everybody did what they were supposed to do. And I think it was just part of our upbringing to work hard and share with everybody what we could do.
One thing that I'm hearing a lot of from people, friends, is that their children, a lot of the kids don't have the hustle today. And I mean hustle in a good sense. You know, that work ethic and get out there and just make things happen. How do you teach a child to hustle?
Well, that's another great question, Jack. I think you got to take away some of the stuff that makes them sit there and do nothing. You know, the kids on their iPods and iPads and all of that equipment that I'm not sure how to operate. But and we don't let Parker do that. We don't let the kids do that. You got to keep giving them goals and things to do and make sure that they are moved along to improve on whether it's athletics or whether it's their studying.
We're talking to Dr. Tom Jameson, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with the extraordinary Dr. Tom Jameson. Tom, for 40-plus years, you've sold people on nutrition, health, and energy. Talk to us about nutrition, health, and energy.
Well, I told you I started back a long, long time ago realizing the importance of nutrition for all of us. And I started doing that because I came up with a list of questions when people came in with multiple symptoms. And I ask about smoking, I ask about coffee, I ask about pop, I ask about alcohol, I ask about sweets, I ask about exercise, I ask about vitamins. Those were questions I came up with. And I found that people were doing several of those things wrong. And it was easier for me to make corrections of those things as all their tests were normal, and they still had 7 symptoms. And what I found out, Jack, was as I got them off of their pot of coffee, I got them maybe to stop smoking or cut down. I got them to exercise. I got them to stop their sweets. And they would come back, and out of their seven symptoms, maybe they were all gone. And I realized it's really important that we do that more with our patients. And it was a simpler way than to put them on seven different drugs for seven different symptoms. And I found out that that was a healthier way to take care of patients. So that's how I got started. And then I realized they needed more fine-tuning, and that's when I hired a nutritionist to get into their regular daily nutrition schedule and what they eat and when they eat and how they eat, and found out all of those things were important.
If you want to learn more, phone number 517-882-6605. 517-882-6605. As we come into these holiday seasons and there's less sunlight, you know, people have a tendency to hibernate. And they overeat and they eat the wrong stuff. What couple of tips could you give them to counteract that?
I think still keeping up their exercise program or adding some exercise for the wintertime. There's a lot of people I talk to that just don't like to exercise, so you got to make some fun thing for them or a way for them to exercise. If they can afford it, they can join a health club for the winter. That would be great. If they can't, try to get some exercise equipment at home. Sometimes if they're like I am, I have to do two or three things at one time. I make sure my exercise equipment is in front of a television set. Back when I didn't have as much television, I put a book rack on my bicycle stand so that I could read and ride at the same time. Now I have the television going. I can ride while I'm watching TV, and I might as well do that rather than just sit on the couch. So they have to exercise is very important in the wintertime. And they can do some of those things by just making sure they walk up the stairs if they can and making sure that they park further away and walk to where they're supposed to get. But they've got to do that for the winter and make changes in things with their nutrition. Try not to, if they're eating sweets every day, cut it back to once or twice a week. Look at the things that they're doing wrong in fast foods and make sure they're not doing that as frequent. But between exercise and watching what they eat, they can keep their weight the same or lose during the wintertime.
Speaking of fast foods, a couple years ago, President Clinton, who was notorious for hamburgers, fast food, fries, decided to forget that, quit that, and he lost 30, 40 pounds. He's kept it off at 65. A lot of people say, I'm too old to change. I'm too old to start to eat healthy.
Well, I don't think that anybody's too old to be healthier. And I think making some changes like what he must have done can be easy. I mean, if you're having to stop at the fast food place to eat, they have a lot of better choices now. The salads that they serve at all of those places can be a lot healthier. And take your time and eat a salad, and those things can make a big plus to your health over the years. But you're never too old to make some changes. There's a lot of diabetics and overweight and hyperlipidemia patients that are in their 60s that we sometimes get them off their medications by making those changes later in life. There are three or four medicines they're on. Sometimes they can get off of them if they lose that 30 or 40 or 50 pounds.
Going from the older generation to the young generation, our own Peter Nielsen says this is the first generation where the parents will outlive the kids. The diabetes amongst these kids and the overweight kids, it's unbelievable. What do parents do?
Well, the kids that have good parents, the good parents have to be able to make these kids exercise and make changes in their diet. It's just important. Even my grandkids, I have 17 grandkids, they still are doing some of the iPods and iPads and the games that they do, but they're limited in time. They got to limit that. They've got, but again, mine are doing the other sports, and you got to get them interested in other things other than just sitting and watching TV. Parker has certain times that he can only do those. He can't do them all the time. I think that's part of our problem. Their kids aren't just getting out to exercise, and they're allowed to eat fast foods all the time. We're making changes, I think, in our schooling system to get better food to the kids, and that will help them a lot, too.
I was recently with the supernatural Lem Barney. Good golfer. And every morning, first thing he does, first 2.5 hours he's up, is he exercises first his soul, he reads the Bible, and then he exercises his body. So, hour and a half and an hour. Talk to us about exercising the soul and then exercising the body.
Jack, that's a great schedule that he's on, and it's not hard to teach Lem Barney that, because he's always probably had great goals in mind, and work ethics have been great. I mean, Parker's taught me how to even exercise my soul. He has to read his Bible every night, and you know, I'm not been the greatest reader of all time, so I'm fortunate he can read it to me too. So he does that. He exercises his body and exercises his soul, and such an important thing, very, very important for all of us.
We have a number of mutual friends, but one is Rick Cole. Do you think Parker could teach Rick Cole how to exercise his soul?
If anybody could, Parker could. So when Parker beats Rick Cole on the golf course, Rick Cole will change his soul, and Parker will do it for us.
The most used phrase in the Bible is, be not afraid. A lot of people are afraid today. The uncertainty. Are you ever afraid, and how do you overcome it?
You know, I think we all are afraid of certain things, but I overcome it because of my past and because of my friends that I have, like you and my family. And so I think you have to surround yourself with great people, and that fear is much less.
Last question, Tom. As we close out tonight, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Be a good person. I think that you can accomplish a lot by being kind and being good. You know, if you're a male, open your door for your females. If you're anybody does anything for you, thank them. Say thank you. I mean, I was out on Halloween night watching all these kids trick-or-treating, and about 10% thanked them. I mean, Parker doesn't thank him once. He thanks him three times. When people do things for you, thank them. Be a good person and you'll be successful.
Well, you could be the poster child for being a good person. So it's been an honor to know you. It's been an honor to play golf with you. Maybe someday I will get an eagle with you. Keep up the great, great work, Tom Jamieson.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. It's Ball.